Hey everyone, I'm Ryan Kalamea.
And I'm Amy Gosha.
Welcome to The Divorce at Altitude, a podcast on Colorado family law.
Divorce is not easy. It really sucks. Trust me, I know. Besides being an experienced divorce attorney, I'm also a divorce client.
Whether you are someone considering divorce or a fellow family law attorney, listen in for weekly tips and insight into topics related to divorce, co-parenting, and separation in Colorado. Welcome back to another episode of Divorce at Altitude. This is Ryan Kalamea. We're going to be talking about parental alienation. This is an issue that comes up frequently whenever custody or parenting time is disputed. And we're joined by a guest. She is a Utah and Texas licensed attorney, Jill Coyle. She has created and grown one of the largest family law firms in the state of Utah. She's also a motivational speaker and is on a mission to ensure that people feel empowered in their own lives to understand their self-worth and then be able to empower others. She's written a book, No One Dies from Divorce, How to Survive and Thrive When Your Marriage Ends. We'll have a link to her book in the show notes. But before I go on, Jill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm really happy to be here. And it's been really great getting to know you a little bit and what you're doing over there in Aspen, Colorado.
Yeah, so you're in Salt Lake, and we talked before we started recording because you also host your own podcast, and we'll get into that. But I've spent a decent amount of time in Salt Lake, and as listeners for Divorce at Altitude know, I'm a avid skier, so I've spent a fair amount of time in your neck of the woods skiing at Snowbird, and I hope you're able to get up on the slopes this year when we're recording in the winter of 2022.
Yes. Yes, we have season passes this year, but man, our snow's been weird. We had like amazing snow in the beginning of the winter, and now it's kind of died down. So it's just been, and then with COVID, you know, everything's just messed up right now.
It is. Well, so for people that don't understand or they hear the term parental alienation, I want to start off with a definition and what are we talking about? So when I say parental alienation, what does that mean to you, Jill?
Yeah, it's a word and a term that's actually used a lot now. It's thrown out in a lot of divorces, like, oh, my spouse is being an alienator. But it's actually a defined term that actually has specific characteristics that would then characterize somebody as an actual parental alienator. And I guess the best definition I can suggest for it is that it's when a parent actively, either intentionally or unintentionally, does things to alienate or gatekeep a child from being freely involved in loving and or having a healthy relationship with the other parent. And when I say it can be intentional, it can literally be actions that parent is purposely doing to thwart the ability for that child to have a relationship with the other parent. But it also can be unintentional, with very, very unconscious things that we are doing as parents to alienate the child from, again, having a healthy or normal relationship with the other parent. And we can go into more of those topics in a little bit later in the show if you'd like.
Yeah. So for intentional alienation, can you give our listeners some examples or ideas of what would be an intentional act of alienation?
Right. Intentional is when you are specifically saying or doing things to the children to, with the knowing that it would make the children dislike or have issues with the other parents. So, you know, your belief is that he, you know, committed domestic violence against you. So you continually tell the children your father is a wife beater, or your dad is a deadbeat, or, you know, your mom, you know, continually did this to me and therefore she is this. It's specifically telling the children things that you believe of the other parent to somehow ruin or hurt their relationship with the child. It's also actions, making the child feel bad that they want to go visit the other parent, or making it very, very hard for the child to go see the other parent. It can be physical actions of denying parent time and just saying you don't get to have that parent time with the other parent. So there are specific things that you're doing with the knowledge that I know that this is making my child think differently or poorly about their other parent.
And the other side of the coin would be unintentional. So to the extent that they're different, obviously the intent is different, but are there things that come up unintentionally that are examples of alienating behavior that you could kind of put into that unintentional bucket?
Absolutely. One of the things that comes up a lot is like right before the child's supposed to go to their parent time with the other parent, that parent's sitting there hugging that child saying, oh, I love you so much. I'm going to miss you so much. I can't believe all the things you're going to miss doing with me because you're going to be with that other parent. That parent possibly could have good intentions of just wanting that child to know, hey, I love you. I'm there for you. But what they really are actually alienating that child from feeling guilty about being able to enjoy their time with the other parent because they're missing out on whatever they're supposed to be doing with that parent. You know, making them like feel bad, like, oh, you're going to miss, you know, we're going to a movie tomorrow and you're going to miss that. Or telling them, well, you better get your homework done with your dad because I know he doesn't do homework with you, you know, or don't come home with homework because, you know, I'm not going to help you do it because it's your dad's responsibility or your mom's responsibility. I don't mean to be gender because I want this to be very, very specific. There has actually not been a link to find of who is more of an alienator or not, whether you're male or female. It can happen in either instances. However, there are links to the way that a male or a female do actually alienate the child.
Yeah. And what you said is certainly my observation earlier is that it's a loaded term. It is certainly thrown out there a lot. I know judges, some it is a real big turnoff for them. Some evaluators, they reject the concept of alienation. So it's a really tricky thing. So the other tricky thing that I think when you talk about alienation is that you have divorce as a change, right? You wrote, you know, no one dies from divorce. And that's true, but it's this process of rebirth and it's a process of transition. So you have these traditional roles in the marriage. It may not be a traditional marriage, but you have these roles usually in the marriage. And then when you go through a divorce, you have a change of those roles. And so I think it's really difficult when you're talking about alienation to address that change. How much do you tell kids about what's going on? And what do you kind of really hide from them? Because if you tell them too much, you can be, you know, an alleged gatekeeper. And so I guess, how do you walk clients through, Jill, or deal with that change, whether it be both, you know, the alienator or the victim of alienation? So can you walk us through some scenarios of things that you go through with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this happens a lot. Obviously, people don't know how to navigate a divorce. They've never either done it before, or if they have, it's their own unique situation. So, you know, a lot of them are just trying to do the best they can. And a lot of times they're failing and sucking at it. And, you know, is it their fault? Not necessarily, but they need to be willing to listen to this advice. And what I tell all my clients is that it's kids will be okay through divorce. All the studies show that kids are going to, they're very, very resilient, that they will be okay if they know a few things. And the first thing they have to know is that both parents love them and they are going to be given the opportunity to love both parents as well. So one of the biggest things you can do from a divorce is you need to set aside your, I guess, put it into two parts. First of all, your anger and hatred toward the person you're divorcing. That's normal. Those are going to be feelings that are going to be felt, but you need to deal with that so that you can then deal with how am I going to deal with the fact that this person is still the parent of my children and they still deserve a relationship with my children. I talk a lot about how if you and your spouse have nothing in common, you absolutely hate each other, you're so angry at each other, but you have kids in common. I tell them to strip away all the anger, strip away all of the beliefs that they have of the other person and get down to one basic thing. And if you can answer this question, then we can build upon it. And the question is do you want your kids to succeed? And hands down, however angry they are, however the belief that or story that they've made up in their head about what's happened and the reasons behind the divorce, they all get down to say, I want my kids to succeed. And I look at them and I say, good, because you know what? Your spouse, through all of this story, through all whatever their belief is, believes the exact same thing. You guys want what's best for your kids at the end of the day. And you might have different stories of what is best for your kids, but at the end of the day, this statistics show that what's best for your kids is having continuous frequent contact with both parents. So if you can kind of just get down to this basic of, okay, I want what's best for my kids. She wants what's best for my kids. We can build a get about that. And I can deal with, you know, my emotional state of whatever I believe with that person. And I can then help my kids be okay through this divorce because I know at the other side, you know, my spouse wants that same thing.
Yeah. And for people that are longtime listeners, they will recognize we've got the Eric and Melanie Wolf hypothetical divorce. So Jill, if Eric Wolf is going through a divorce with his wife, Melanie, and he comes to your office after a day of skiing and says, listen, I just blew off some steam. I'm going to go through a divorce and I'd like to hire you. And then he relays these various things that Melanie does. So Melanie, every time they've been separated for a while, Melanie, every time tells the kids, really winds them up before coming over to his house. Classic kind of alienating behavior. What are the things or the remedies as a lawyer can you help with Eric in addressing alienating behavior by Melanie?
Great question. First of all, there are some attorneys that are going to just get tuned off if you use the words narcissist or if you use the words borderline, or if you use alienation. There are some attorneys that are just going to say, hey, it doesn't matter. The courts don't care. We just don't need to deal with it. But the problem is you can't be that black and white. There is actually cases where alienation is happening, gatekeeping is happening, and borderline personalities are involved, whether it's a diagnosis or just a working theory. So my first thing is you got to find an attorney that actually understands what's going on in this situation, because you have to be able to create within your parenting plan, within your divorce decree, parameters to protect yourself when you have a parent like this. You have to have strict rules in your divorce decree that basically lay out what happens so that you can be protected if these conditions or these alienating factors happen again. And the way that you do it is you have to have rules and you got to follow the rules. And if you have an attorney that understands that and can then help you negotiate that into your divorce, then afterwards, there's going to be protections for you if your spouse just chooses not to do it or continually chooses to do these behaviors that are going to hurt your kids. Well, then guess what? You have a decree that's going to stand up in court, that you're going to be able to take all this evidence back into court and hopefully get some relief to help you with this situation. And it's really important to do that now in your divorce than to be the one to, you know, say, oh, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight right now, but I'm going to then, you know, come back later if there's a problem. I promise you, you don't want to negotiate your divorce after the fact because it's going to make it 1,000 times harder.
I agree, Jill. And one of the hardest things is that there is no perfect parenting plan. So there's no parenting plan that is going to minutely detail, don't wind up the kids before a parenting exchange. But you can have other things. So for example, not telling the children about particular activities or events or not speaking to third parties negatively. So there are details that you can have in your parenting plan, but I think you would agree that there are these variations of alienating behavior. And oftentimes Melanie, if she is the alienating, the gatekeeping parent, then she just will find any kind of way around if she's really committed. It's a variation, right? Where there's different grades of alienating behavior. And if it gets so bad that the kids don't want to go to Eric's for his parenting time, what can Eric do?
So the first thing is that your kids will not believe alienating behaviors if they get quality time with you to show that those things that the spouse has said about you are not true. So the first thing, if you have a spouse that is doing alienating behaviors or is a gatekeeper of sorts, you need to fight for as much time as possible with your kids so that they can have a relationship with you separate from whatever mom is or dad is telling them about the other parent. And then the second thing is, so the question earlier about how much do you tell your kids or what do you tell your kids? You have to tell your kids something. They're not dumb. They need to know what's going on. They want to know that they're loved. They want to know that they're going to be supported. They want to know that their lives aren't going to be ultimately disrupted by this divorce. So one of the things you can do is if you have another parent that's very, very alienating or gatekeeping, is you do whatever you can to support your kids in having consistency in their relationship with you. So don't move super far away. Allow them to be close to their friends, to stay in the same schools, to stay in the activities. Be supportive of that. Even if, you know, you're frustrated because spouse signed them up for basketball without asking you permission or whatnot, if you know basketball is important to your child, be supportive of it. So always pushing back that you should be the one to have to give permission and that you're frustrated that this alienating parent keeps making things. Don't push it to the other pendulum where you say, well, I'm moving away. I want my kids to have their own life with me and their own life with mom, because that's just going to further their belief that there is no way that you guys can coexist. And kids don't want two separate lives. They want one life. What the kids can do is they can get very comfortable living in two homes, but they don't want to have to, you know, create two sets of complete relationships that are shielded from the other home because, you know, that parent is just trying to ignore or forget that this other parent ever existed. So that's one thing you can do is you gotta support your kids in their life. And by doing that, even if the alienating parent is the one that has the majority of, you know, or is the custodial parent, so the kids are going there, make sure you live close. Make sure you allow those kids to continue in the activities that they love and be super supportive of them in it by showing up, going to them, and making sure that your kids feel like you're doing what you can to support their life and then showing up. Because again, if the other parent is being very alienating or gatekeeping, you showing up consistently is going to show those kids that they matter and that whatever, you know, that alienating parent is saying is not true. The second part to your question, and I know this is a long-winded answer, is that don't give up time. So a lot of times, especially with teenagers, a parent, you know, gets a kid that just says, I don't want to see you anymore, or I don't want to spend time with you. And our first reaction is, as parents, is, okay, if I step back, then it will help me draw closer to them. That's not what studies are showing is the best for your children. What you need to do is you need to take your time and make sure you're spending quality time with your kid. You also then need to get you and that child in therapy so that you can be discussing and talking about what is causing that child to want to pull away from you. And you want to do it in an open, safe environment so that the kid can feel like they have a safe way of telling you why they feel this way. And you can try to rectify it in whatever way is necessary.
This episode is brought to you by our law firm, Kalamea Gosha. Amy and I describe our law firm as an innovative and ambitious trial team that pushes the boundaries to discover new frontiers in family law, personal injuries, and criminal defense in Colorado. We currently have offices in Aspen, Glenwood Springs, Edwards, Denver, and Boulder. If you want to find out more, visit our website, Kalamea.law. Now, back to the show. I agree, Jill. And it's really, these are tricky situations because Eric, he could have committed domestic violence or he could have had an affair, something where he really was in the wrong. And Melanie could be using that against him. And there could be legitimate reasons why a child is angry at Eric and saying, I don't want to spend time with you. But doing that in a therapeutic manner is something that certainly is on the table. And ultimately, I think, you know, I've seen it where if the children will refuse to spend time with Eric, then, you know, the nuclear option is starting to be discussed. And when I say nuclear option, the last resort or the last choice is the court does have authority to say the kids are going to spend all of their time with Eric. And because everyone needs to know, Melanie, the children, that the children, and oftentimes one of the problems from my observation is the children are given, they're kind of put up on a pedestal by one of the parents or both of the parents, and they're allowed to choose. And when you have that, when they are given the authority to choose by the parents, then it results in the kind of them posturing and really trying to advocating. And so sometimes courts will say, all right, well, it's so bad that I'm going to place you in the care of Eric 100% of the time. And then you have these residential facilities or away camps. I think there was the Atlantic newspaper or magazine had an article about these residential where you go to Tennessee or Minnesota for, you know, several weeks on end. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I mean, they're expensive, but that's when things are so bad that children aren't even talking to Eric. But there really are some extreme consequences in these scenarios.
Right. And it's happening, especially more in Utah, where they call them timeouts, where they will absolutely switch custody and that alienating parent doesn't get any time with that child for 30 days, 60 days, because it usually fixes the problem. All of a sudden the kid, you know, oh, I do love my dad, and it gets him away from that. It also sends a strong message that we're not going to be okay with this anymore. One of the things also is a lot of times, you know, it's so emotional for the non-alienating parent. And so a lot of times they just, you know, think, oh, maybe I'll just give up. And so when they give up, they then give up everything. And this is my thing is that, okay, maybe you fought hard. Maybe you've decided to just let that child be with the other parent for a while, but don't give up on having a relationship with them. And what that means is still go to their basketball games, still show up for, you know, whatever you can find out about. Send them birthday presents. Send them Christmas gifts. I mean, I have so many parents that were like, well, if my child doesn't want to come to my home, then they're not going to get their Christmas present. And I'm like, listen, that sends the message to this kid that you don't care about them, that you don't love them. And that's going to be more damning than if you just show up in small ways. Because what's going to happen is these kids are going to get older. They're going to get wiser. They're going to see these behaviors that the alienating parent did. And they're going to gravitate back to that, you know, non-custodial parent or that non-alienating parent. And they're going to do it much easier when they have all this evidence to show that, you know, this parent showed up even when I was being the dumb one and I was pushing them away. And they need that. So, you know, I know it's hard. And I know that parents that are being, you know, had these alienation cases, just they're exasperated and they're sad. But at the end of the day, it doesn't give you right to just wash your hands and say, fine, if you don't want a relationship with me, then I have no relationship with you. I kind of look at it as, listen, you're the adult. They're going to act like children. They're acting like children. You need to be the adult. So still show up in the way that you can, because in the long run, it's going to mean more to your child than you will ever know.
Let's switch gears and talk about Melanie. So if Melanie, and you said, and I agree with you 100%, Jill, in that the gender types, you know, it crosses borders and it crosses, you know, stereotypes. So if Melanie comes into your office and she says, Eric says that I'm alienating and I'm a gatekeeper, I don't even know what that means, I just want the children to spend time with him. And, you know, Melanie is wrongfully accused of being a gatekeeper. What are the things that she can do or that are available, tools, methods, ways of communicating? What are the things that she can do if she's being wrongfully accused of being a gatekeeper?
Right. Earlier in the podcast, you talked about how when you get divorced, roles change, right? A lot of times we do our gender roles in a marriage where, you know, the mom is doing homework and, you know, taking kids to doctors, and not necessarily because it's a gender role, but because we're moms. That's just kind of what we do. And then the dad, you know, they're going to work, they're advancing their career. And so we've got these roles. And so when we get divorced, a lot of times we get stuck in thinking, well, he never did this, therefore he can't do this. Or she now has to go work, so this is going to change. And we get stuck in thinking that we're so narrow-minded that people's roles can't change. And no, when divorce happens, guess what? Divorce is going to change the rules. And this is what I tell my dad. If you want to be an equal parent, you better show up as an equal parent. So don't expect me to come to court and fight for you to get equal time if you're not showing up to do the work of equal time, which means you get to now do the homework. You get to now cook the dinner. You get to make sure that these kids are being taken care of in a role that you maybe didn't do during the marriage. And then with moms, I say, listen, I know it's hard. You have been doing this primarily, but he wants a relationship with the kids. You're okay with that. So guess what? This is the time to give up that role. You don't have to do it all now. He gets to step up and he gets to do that homework, and you get to be okay with that. So we do a lot of talking and coaching about how it's okay to give up these roles. And just because we're giving up partially these roles doesn't make me a worse mom, doesn't make him a better dad. What it's doing is it's giving you the chance that when he has the kids on his his time, it's his time. And you get to kind of sit back and not worry about that because he gets to step up in that role. And you get to change your role. And you get to be passionate about what you want to do in your career. So in Melanie's case, she now gets to step up and say, what do I want to be when I grow up? What does my role look like now after the divorce? What do I want to do that's going to benefit me? I get to start dreaming again. And when the kids are with him, yay, I get to think differently. I get to do things for me, something that I haven't done very, during the marriage. I always joke because if my husband ever leaves me, he's getting custody of the kids because I get to then do things that I, dream about doing that I can't do as a married mom of four, running multiple businesses and doing what I'm doing. So I make that joke because it really is one of those just role. It's a mindset and we just got to get in this place of mindset. And then we talk about, hey, are you doing some of these alienating roles that you need to change? And a lot of times they're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. I didn't realize I was doing that. And it's just telling somebody, hey, we can do that better, and them changing their perspective. The last thing I would say is, you have to go through the grief cycle of divorce. So getting out of the anger stage faster is the best way we can do that. And that means we need to get mentally charged and mentally prepared. So getting into therapy, getting into something to help you be able to deal with that anger, to move that aside so you can start thinking rationally, is really going to help you step up to be a better co-parent.
Great advice, Jill. And I think for both Eric and Melanie, when you're dealing with these situations, think divorce coach or a parenting coach, there are specialists out there. At least here in Colorado, you have to do a parenting through divorce class. But taking that next step, I've had clients that have consulted with people about, if Eric, he gets triggered by Melanie signing the children up for a sport, basketball, and he doesn't know about it and he finds out about it, it could trigger him. How does he address that? Or in Melanie's circumstance, how does she communicate with Eric if he now all of a sudden wants to take his having problems with taking the kids to a doctor's appointment because he's never done it. He doesn't even know who the doctor is, showing up at parent-teacher conferences. And that just really irritates her because she's understandably, Melanie's saying, when did this happen? Like, if you had done this, Eric, we wouldn't be going through a divorce. So when did you become super dad? And then there's always this tension of, is this parent doing it for child support or what's going on here? But really addressing that with a professional to help you wade through what's kind of fact from fiction or what's really going on and how do you appropriately address that? But then also you have these evaluations. In Colorado, we have a CFI and a PRE. And really, if you're dealing with alienation, you're dealing with some pretty high level concepts, enmeshment, where, enmeshment for listeners that don't know, Jill, what, when I refer to enmeshment, what are we talking about?
Well, for what I was thinking in Utah is that when we're looking at custody, it is primary caretaker of the children. And there's not a presumption of custody. And so it is something that you have to come to court and you can say, well, if I 50-50, this is why, and this is in the best interest of the children. So my thought while you were going through that statement is that, just like I said, if you're a dad and you've never been an equal parent, but you're showing up to court to say, I want to be an equal parent, you better have a good reason why. And the court a lot of times is going to look at, actions speak louder than words. If you've never gone to parent-teacher conferences, if you've never taken them to a doctor, if you don't know who their teachers are, then the court's going to have a problem with you coming in saying, oh, but I want 50-50. And it is going to come down to, are you, wanting to lower child support or whatnot? They're going to look at the reasons behind it. I think that's why a lot of people in Utah fight so hard about a 50-50 presumption, which a lot of states have gone to where they start at 50-50 and then they change that because they recognize this, especially in Utah, especially like we're still where one party works out of the home and one person stays at home. So because of that, there are roles that are just completely different where a 50-50 might not make sense. So you have to understand that. And again, if you want to be a 50-50 parent, what are you doing to change that? I think a lot of times too, with the immense, we get caught up in our story or belief that because I believed he was a bad husband, he's therefore going to be a bad dad. But usually it's not that way. Like he can be a really bad, crappy husband, but can be a really, really good dad. And if that's the case, then we need to separate those. The divorce gets rid of the bad husband. Great. That's exactly what we wanted. But he's still the father of your kids and he's a good dad. So great. Let's create something within your divorce decree that's going to support that, give you exactly what you need to be protected and away from whatever he was, but give your kids the chance to have, you know, two really good loving parents.
Right. Well, Jill, I appreciate the insights. It's something that we could undoubtedly go on and on about because there's so many different wrinkles and nuances to alienation, but I appreciate the insight and giving us an overview of what this all entails. So, but for those that don't know anything about you, like I said, we'll have links to the show notes, but can you tell us a little bit about your book and your podcast?
Sure. So yeah, my book is all over Amazon, so you can go get it there. It's also in Utah. It's on almost every local bookstore. So I'm always support local if you can. But I just recognize that when people are going through a divorce, it's one of the hardest trials of their life. And so I really wanted to make sure that I wrote down some of my thoughts and advice that I give to every client that's going through this, that you are going to be okay. And if you can use this as a blank slate to, you know, really launch yourself to become a better version of yourself, then divorce becomes a movement rather than a trial. It becomes something that we can use to actually become better people, fathers, mothers, humans. So you can find it on Amazon. You can find me on Jill Coyle, everything Jill Coyle, jillcoyle.com, Jill Coyle Instagram. You can also then find my, you know, my law website, coylelaw.com, which has a million blog, tons of advice on divorce and how to get through this. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Cool. Well, Jill, thank you. If I end up at Snowbird, I will drop you a line or anywhere on Little Cottonwood Canyon. But appreciate the time and thanks. And hopefully listeners have gained some insight into parental alienation and what it is and what they can do about it. But Until next time, thanks for joining us on Divorce at Altitude.
Hey everyone, this is Ryan again. Thank you for joining us on Divorce at Altitude. If you found our tips, insight, or discussion helpful, please tell a friend about this podcast. For show notes, additional resources, or links mentioned on today's episode, visit divorceataltitude.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen in. Many of our episodes are also posted on YouTube. You can also find Amy and me at kalamea.law or 970-315-2365. That's kalamaya.law.